You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
Hand across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Def Jam Gundy. And this, my friends, is episode 278. Woo! On today's show, we're joined by Yaron Weitzman of Bleacher Report. He covers the Knicks. It was a great conversation. Just finished it. I think you guys are really going to enjoy it. We touch on all kinds of topics. We talk about media speculation around Jeff Hornacek's future, Joakim Noah's possible stretch provision, Jeff possibly starting Moutier at the behest of management. We discussed how much of that we know is factual, how much of that is people guessing. I think you guys are going to like that segment. We talk about a wonderful article that Yaron wrote about Jarrett Jack and how about he's basically the prom king of the NBA. Then we get into the mysterious picture of Kristaps Porzingis shooting buckets in his apartment's gym and how Yaron played a part in that mini saga. Then we close out with some thoughts on the draft and some thoughts on Frank Ntilikina. Stick around till the end. You guys are going to enjoy it. All right, let's start the show. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
I want to lead off by talking about media speculation about a couple of topics in the Knicksosphere right now. The first of which is Jeff Hornacek's job security. And when I say media speculation, I've kind of noticed something in the past maybe week or so where people seem to be more sure that there are more whispers that Hornacek will be gone during the offseason. And when I try to kind of trace it back to some sort of like sourced reporting from someone inside the organization, I can't really find it. It seems to come back to, it kind of seems to have ramped up when Mark Stein mentioned it in the Times, maybe like a random report from the Post a couple of weeks ago. I can't really trace it back to any like specific whisperings from the organization itself. So like, I'm curious, someone in your position, do you hear things that you know, maybe don't come from Steve Mills himself, obviously, but from people who are like talking to people in the Knicks? Or is this more kind of a semi-informed guessing over what they think the Knicks will do based on what like they see publicly?
I would say both, right? I agree with you. I mean, when's this going up? I didn't ask you. I know we're recording now, but when's this going live?
Okay, this will air like later on tonight, so it'll be Friday morning show. It'll be the show for Friday. Yeah.
So the previous day, I wrote a story kind of evaluating Jeff Hornacek, right? And his job he's done with the Knicks with Bleacher Report. Giving myself a plug there.
Yeah, please do.
Just, you know, a little how the sausage is made. I'm assigned that story because of Mark Stein's I'll call it report, right? I guess it's a report in his newsletter where he had
because it's kind of this like thing, you know, like whispers are growing, but like what does that mean, right?
So I think so all season people kind of assumed Hornacek would be gone after this year unless they had some kind of incredible performance, surprising performance, which let's just say that has not happened. Can we agree there?
Yes, we can.
So that's where the starting point, right? It's kind of like we assume that's going to happen. You have a separate part, which is the idea that people need something to write about. And if you're writing about the Knicks, what else are you going to write about, right?
It's tough.
And his contract is one more year, which for a coach is essentially having a year left on a coach's contract is the equivalent of, you know, a contract coming up. Coaches don't coach under 1 year. It's kind of weird. I get the reasoning behind it. The whole idea of, you know, dead lame duck, you can't do it. But it's kind of funny how just coaching contracts have become these things. The last year just doesn't count anymore. So it's time for the evaluation. Then there's the part where, as reporters, you speak to people or hear things, I guess, off the record. You kind of file away throughout the year, and you know, you kind of when the moment strikes, you can kind of go dip back into that notebook that you have in your mind and just kind of use some of that information. So I would say combining all that and combining the idea that I can't tell you how many times this year I've had opposing assistant coaches or scouts say, so Hornacek's gone, right? Or what's going on there?
So it's kind of just a, do they think that for all the reasons that are obvious, including him being the previous regime's pick? Or yes, are they – so it's mostly that, not like – because I've been kind of, you know, Mike had that piece in The Athletic the other day about the mid-range game, which made me almost blow a gasket because I just couldn't believe the explanation that Hornacek gave for what was going on. It just didn't seem credible to me, especially the stats he was using, which like seemed like not really related to like realistic numbers. I've had some beef with him. I don't think he's like a total disaster, but I just don't think he's like the right choice to go forward. Like, is he seen that way around the league, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of not fascinated. Intrigued is the word I would use, because, and I'm going to hedge this, I don't like calling for anybody's firing.
I know, it doesn't feel,
It's a weird thing. That's why when I wrote my thing, I tried to keep it kind of really stats-based and just kind of, you know, focusing in on some trends and schemes as opposed to saying some things that would have to change doesn't mean he necessarily has to go. Maybe he could adapt. I'm intrigued by him, and I guess this kind of feeds into that. The whole idea of, I mean, this is a guy, and I quoted him, like, he has a Zach Lowe interview on Grantland from 2013, and he's talking about how mid-range jump shots are bad, and you have to, you know, you want to play fast and shoot a lot of threes. Mm-hmm. And that's 2013. At the time, he ran, like, when he was with Phoenix, multiple point guards running up and down the floor. They were a really modern offense for that time, I mean, for any time. And then he comes to the Knicks, and it's just not the case. And last year, you know, some of that was obviously due to Phil Jackson's presence, and part of that is, I mean, Hornacek, I still don't understand fully why he took this job or why he kind of gave in to the triangle last year. I think he had a little more leverage that he enacted. But then this year, Jackson's gone, and the Knicks, I mean, I know Mike wrote the story. It was excellent. I quoted it. I don't know what the number is. I think they're second in the league in long twos this year. And just they give up a ton of corner threes. They don't take threes. And it's like you don't have to play like the Warriors or the Rockets. And I get that your team doesn't have a lot of dribble penetrators, and that, you know, Porzingis and Beasley and Cantor are post guys who don't pass a lot, and passes are kind of how you create threes and all that. I get that. But you got to be middle of the pack. You can't be last. You know what I mean?
I definitely do. And there's something that covering the team every day does to you, at least someone in like my position who's like supposed to give like tons of opinions, that sort of warps you a little bit. Because when you said, you know, I don't like to call for someone's firing, it kind of was like an arrow into my heart. 'Cause I'm like, oh, I used to be that way. Like when I first started doing this at the beginning of the season, and I don't know, over the course of watching him over a year, I've become more comfortable with just like, I'm not comfortable with him being the guy in charge. But you do bring up an interesting point in like, can he perhaps adapt? Do you have any sense that he is looking to, like, you know, bring in different viewpoints, like what kind of room he runs? Is he open to this kind of like what you hear reportedly anyway, like Popovichian, like, you know, team of rivals, I want people to challenge me? Do you have any sense for how he is in that regard? Like, is it reasonable to think he might change looking back at what happened this year?
I mean, this is a cynical way to look at it. The way he was last year, he clearly has a survivalist instinct. Game just happened in Phoenix too, and it's going to come as a it's going to come as a barb. It's not meant to, but you know, when bosses tell him to do something, he'll do it.
Okay.
So that, and Phoenix, remember, they had him fire his assistants, and they fired his assistants, and he stuck around. And last year, you know, Jackson, Phil had him, you know, they were going triangle aspects, and then was it the All-Star? I lose track now. Last year was such a circus. It's all molds together, bells together, but whatever that point was. You know, Phil says triangle all the time now, and Hornacek says cool. He was his boss, but he didn't have to, but he did it. So I guess, you know, if Perry or Mill said, hey, we want to play, this is a bad example because I don't think they actually care about this, but play KP at the five the whole time,
right,
I think he would do it.
I would say that's not a good trait. there's obviously a fine line in any work that you do of like balancing what you think is right with what other people are telling you, and I'm sure in the NBA it's amplified to the nth degree. Like, it's a very political animal, but at some point, if you're a coach, you have to have very strong opinions about like what how you want your team to play, right?
Yeah, and like there's something to be said. Listen, I'll give him a compliment because I'm coming down hard on him. There's something to be, and I know I'm hedging. I know what I'm doing. But there's something to be said about somebody who can kind of adapt his styles to his personnel, right? Too many coaches, and I think this is actually more of a problem in the NFL than the NBA, but too many coaches in all sports, this is my scheme, this is how we do it, you adapt to me. So something to be said about a guy who, when he has 5 point guards on his team, like Phoenix, you know, plays 2 or 3 at a time, and when he has, you know, his best scorers are Porzingis and Beasley and Kanter, you know, they go the ball through them. It's just the idea of having...
That is fair. It's just the way he explains it then that I just find it entirely unconvincing. I'm like, are you lying to me or do you not get what you're saying? Because he starts defending like the art of the mid-range and shit. And I'm like, I'm rolling my eyes because when you look at the percentages, it's just never going to be the high efficiency play to shoot as many, no matter who is in the mid-range shooting for you.
They're playing bad math. It's like blackjack and the Knicks are playing bad math. If their team is so talented, if their team was, you know, the most talented team in the league, but they were playing their current scheme, the math is against them in terms of the amount of corner threes and layups they're giving up and the amount of, and how few of them they're taking. It's just, you have to play at such a high level. If you're going to do that style, you have to do what you do, you know, better than anyone else does, if I'm phrasing that correctly, just because the math is working against you. So I agree with you. So it goes back. And I like, to me, the defense has almost been more worrisome. I know the offense gets a lot of the glow shine there.
Oh, no, you're not wrong.
Yeah, and the things he says, that's the part that's thrown me off a little bit sometimes, where he talks about closeouts or you know, we're not helping. It's kind of, for the past 2 years now, we've been hearing the same kind of quotes, you know. Yeah. Closeouts, so we're not ball penetration. There's again, you don't have to be, you're not gonna be a top 5 defense if you have Derrick Rose on your team last year, if you have Jarrett Jack and Tim Hardaway this year, you know, Kanter, you're not gonna be a top 5 defense. But there's certain, that's why when I evaluate him, I think kind of looking at shot profiles is a great way to look at in terms of how, whether you feel comfortable or not with him taking your team into the future.
Circling back to something you mentioned like a minute or two ago, just that kind of idea of him being willing to do what the front office tells him to. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious. I saw this reported in a Berman article about a week ago. No one ever really challenged it, so I'm assuming it's true, or maybe no one noticed it. But he said kind of nonchalantly that the front office had asked Jeff to start Moutier after the All-Star break, which I don't think is like scandalous if true, but that was the first time I had seen reported it. Like, have you heard that same thing? Do you know if that's a truth or is likely to be true?
It's likely to be true. I can't say here whether I've been, you know, heard that on the record or anything like that. But I would say connecting the dots, Moody has been pretty bad and Burke's been pretty good, and you know, Frank, they obviously want to get him some minutes. The point, it does seem pretty clear that there's, I'm not gonna say to start him, but there's, you know, the idea of getting Moutier right has been kind of emphasized.
I gotcha. And just to round out this idea of sort of like media speculation, what's coming from people inside, the other big storyline there of people trying to figure out what the Knicks are going to do in the future, other than the draft, of course, would be Joakim Noah, are they going to stretch him after September 1st? It's kind of been like building steam in a very similar way to the Jeff Hornacek story, in which people are kind of referencing just other stories of people speculating. So have you heard anything that may have kind of trickled out from the front office on this, that they're looking to do this? Or is this more, I hope they don't from a personal perspective, but...
No, I think the plan was kind of this year, you know, I think they kind of knew early on that whenever that happened, I think they kind of knew early on that that was it for the year, you know.
Yeah, okay.
They tried trading him, obviously, but lol, and we'll just leave it at that. and I think they kind of knew that was it, and I think they're just going to regroup next year. Maybe Noah, if there's a new coach, is willing to come back for a little bit. What's it? Is the September 1st date, right? Is that the date where the stretch is then for next year?
The next season?
I would imagine the Porzingis injury kind of affects their plans a little bit in terms of if there's an urgency to clear cap space this year or lack thereof now.
Right.
If they're going to go into the year kind of saying we got another full rebuild year. So I think it's kind of just right now holding pattern, wait and see.
Gotcha. I want to talk about Jarrett Jack and an article that you wrote about Jarrett Jack. But first, just want to remind our listeners that you guys are listening to the Locked On Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day. In just a minute, we're going to talk about Jarrett Jack. But first, I got to talk to you gamblers. Look, I know your bracket's busted. You know how I know that? Because everyone's bracket is busted every year, except for one random guy out in South Dakota in a shed who's never watched basketball and threw darts at a wall or whatever other BS. But here's the good news. There's still a way for you to cash in on March Madness at MyBookie. It doesn't matter if you've been a player for years or you're just dipping your toes in the college b-ball betting pool, you can lay down some money today and score big on college hoops. Look, I would only recommend a service that has been good to me and my listeners. I use it. Our listeners use it. That's why I'm telling you to make your way to MyBookie. You win and they actually pay you. Fast and without any hassles. None of this BS run around. Give us 19 business days. They even have in-game live betting, so if you're like me and you can't get your stuff together in time to bet before the game starts, you're not out of luck. Join now, and MyBookie will match your first deposit with a 50% bonus when you use promo code LOCKEDONNBA. Visit MyBookie.ag today. Use promo code LOCKEDONNBA. Play, win, get paid, son. All right, so let's talk about Jarrett Jack. I love the article that you wrote. I thought it was very informative and entertaining. I'm just wondering if you can maybe tell our listeners the general premise of the article, because I think a lot of them might be surprised if they haven't come across the article yet, and I highly recommend they click on it multiple times after they listen to this podcast. But I think they might be surprised by how Jarrett Jack is viewed in NBA circles.
First off, what kind of caveman listeners do you have that are not consuming every article I write about the Knicks?
You know what? I gotta say, people who listen to this show every day have probably read that article like three times already.
That's a good point too.
That's commitment. I don't know how you guys do it. Props to you.
But I'll summarize anyway. Basically, the idea was, I mean, I interviewed him. Just he's an interest. Going into the interview, I wasn't really sure what I was gonna write about. I had some thoughts. Or I started talking to him, but you start picking things up around, you know, as you listen to things and hear him talk to him throughout the year. So one, I had heard, and Bruce, I think it was on a Broussard podcast originally, that him talking to how Durant had called him originally before joining the Warriors, because Jack had played that one season with Curry. So I knew about that, and just you hear stories about Jack, start asking around, and basically he's like, I kind of dubbed him the NBA's unofficial prom king, that just guys love him. Like, to me, one of my favorite stories is, you know, as I'm interviewing him, I guess it was a couple days or a day after DeMarcus Cousins tore his ACL. I'm forgetting what he hurt, but was Achilles. And he kind of said, yeah, I forget how DeMarcus Cousins' name came up. I think his name flashed across the TV. And Jack goes, yeah, I just spoke to him the other day. I told him I was proud of him, how he was playing, kind of yada, yada, yada. And I said, how do you know him? And he goes, I played in New Orleans. I think it was last year. I'm getting my timelines confused. But I think it was last year he had a 10-day, or 2 years ago he had a 10-day contract with him. He hadn't played for 2 years. And I'm like, wait, you over a 10-day contract, you became kind of boys with DeMarcus Cousins, where he now takes your phone call, you know, at a time like when he's injured. And he's like, yeah, it's just kind of the way it is. And you start talking to guys around the league, and like everybody's got a Jarrett Jack story.
The prom king analogy I thought was pretty apt, because as I was reading what you wrote about him, he does seem to straddle this line of like wise father figure, and right, yet like there's some like secret party animal thing going on. Like,
oh, for sure.
You mentioned 2 Chainz. Was that Beasley joking around, like the type of people that were at Jarrett Jack's house, or did he actually go over there and see 2 Chainz?
No, I'll give you a good. So that was legit. Okay, so when you do stories like this, if the guys know Michael Beasley, that can be golden for quotes. So I went to Beasley and I said, you know, just doing a story on Jack. Here's my premise. First, what do you think? And he goes, man, I've been wondering that myself in terms of like why so many guys are friends with him. And Beasley knows Jack from growing up. They both grew up in the same DC, DMV area, DC, right, Maryland, Baltimore area. Virginia area. So Beasley goes, yeah, like, you know, you go to his house and you show up for a party and 2 Chainz is there. And I think the quote was, bro, who the fuck are you? And he told me that, and Beasley told me 2 stories. The second one he told me is that the way Beasley tells it, he says, I'm sitting in the locker room and we look over and Jarrett just on the phone, cracking up with somebody, talking it out, cracking up, hangs up. And I go, bro, who was that? Expecting it to be, you know, his brother or something like that. Uh-huh. And Beasley says that Jack says, oh man, that was just Jay-Z. Okay. So I bring those two stories to Jack. The first one, the 2 Chainz one, he goes, yeah, that's accurate. I'm like, the Jay-Z one? He's like, no, I've never kicked it with Jay-Z like that. I've spoken to him, but I can't verify that.
So what is it about him, do you think, that having talked to him, like when you talk to him, do you see that? You're like, oh, I get it. Or is it still sort of mysterious?
I think he tells it like it is, which it sounds like a cliche, but sure. A lot of these guys, they don't get that. You know, they grew up with Yes Men and guys around them. It's a bubble. So having someone who's just a straight shooter, who's fun, he's definitely a fun hang, who knows his stuff, he's been on a bunch of teams. He's just a likable guy. It's just, I think you have like all these boxes. I don't think it's one magic thing. He checks off all these boxes. I mean, he's open. I mean, he told me a story like, you know, he learned his rookie years. He was on the Portland Trailblazers and everyone kind of said, stay away from Zach Randolph. And he's like, but I met Zach and I started hanging out with him and I'm like, oh, I actually like him. And he's like, and he told me that that's kind of when he learned that you have to start kind of figure people out for yourself.
Yeah, and that's more prom king stuff. It's someone who can like hang out with like the jocks and also like the stoners. And he's
exactly.
Like, and everyone just kind of likes him. Like,
yeah, and he knows how to make it. He doesn't judge them, forms his own uh-huh. judgment or lack thereof. Yeah, it's interesting.
And maybe I don't know this neighborhood well enough, but it's sort of tickled me that he lives in Riverdale. Is that like sort of a weird place for a pro athlete to live, or is it just like the most pragmatic possible location?
It's well, yes and yes. So I'm gonna give. So he happens. Me, Jack, and I are literally. Or I wouldn't say we're. He lives one building over from me, which is why
was
tickled by that Riverdale idea also, because you know, I live in Riverdale. I walk around, and you don't think of it as a home to NBA players.
Uh-huh.
But he lives one building over. So it's definitely Tim Hardaway actually used to live there as well.
Before, oh really?
In his original contract.
Okay.
But I asked him kind of why, because again, you're not wrong to ask that. And
sure.
Basically, he said he wanted a midpoint between the practice facility and the garden, and this is it.
Yeah. Well, I opened it up on a map. I was like, you know what? I don't really know Riverdale. Maybe I don't like know what's going on. And then I opened the map. I'm like, oh, it's like dead center.
It's dead center. I mean, the Knicks, they might have the greatest mileage distance between their training facility and their arena.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Like they practice up in I wonder if I get buzzed for saying that, but they practice up in Tarrytown in Westchester, and they practice and they play obviously in the garden, and they fly out of Westchester.
Have they ever talked about like just building like a floor somewhere in a skyscraper or something?
I mean,
you know,
I guess. I mean, not that I heard of. I mean, this is relatively new, this facility. I mean, I guess this is what happens when you are in a big city.
Yeah.
You know, you have less options. A lot of guys choose to live in the suburbs. Jarrett chose the spot literally right in the middle, which is pretty funny.
I love it. Was there anything you couldn't like squeeze into the article that was good besides Jay-Z? Because he just sounds like such an interesting person. I'm like, were there extra tidbits?
Yeah, no,
director's cut? This is okay if there's not, but I gotta ask.
No, I honestly think I got most. I mean, one here, it's a fun, you know, it's just showing why I likable. One of the things, he loves metaphors. He uses metaphors all the time. And like metaphors on metaphors, and then he says it's because, you know, he likes to communicate clearly. And I asked him like where that come from, and he gave an example of he was talking about how one of the first times he was at his financial planner's, you know, office or something, and he goes, they're giving numbers in this, and he says, man, you guys are throwing all these big numbers and big words, I don't understand what the hell any of them mean, can you explain this differently? Which is, I mean, it kind of goes to the idea, like, he's just honest and likable. He's not pretending to be something he's not, and, you know, he'll call you on stuff, so.
That is totally endearing. Something that, there's been, like, a weird story circling you a little bit. That's not probably the good way to phrase it, but this, like, who is your source on the Kristaps shooting jumpers in the gym?
The good old Alan Hahn, who never responded to me when I you can hear the background if you want.
Oh my god. Were people wildly speculating who someone said it was a Adidas rep, or was that what?
I was sent a picture of Porzingis shooting, which is newsworthy, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I tweeted it out, and then And I don't, the Knicks, I'm pretty sure, were not aware he was shooting. You know, I think that was kind of,
I don't remember
what Hornets X is that quote for. And again, I don't want to say more than I'm supposed to, but you know, but it seemed like that was not aware. But then Alan Hahn wrote, good old Alan Hahn of MSG, wrote one of his Knicks Fix blogs or whatever. Yeah. And I got to queue up the words, but essentially, I think I phrased it in Twitter. Someone sent it to me, and he essentially wrote, "It won't take many guesses to find out who sent it to him." Just one hint. Derrick Rose had a similar thing, and he was an Adidas athlete, and so was Porzingis. He could not be further from the truth with that one.
But you're not at liberty to divulge your source, I'm assuming.
No, probably not. But it was certainly not an Adidas representative. And I just find it funny, the idea when people kind of, I'm okay, cool with speculating, but he kind of, I don't know, I'm not, well, I like to think of myself as more than an Adidas spokesman.
I mean, basketball Twitter can occasionally like really delight me in its willingness to go down these like insane like truther conspiracy rabbit holes. They're definitely not imbued from that. Do you get hit with like random tips all the time, or people like, "Hey, I saw, you know, whoever like at the bar last night," and blah, blah, blah. Like, are people constantly doing that kind of thing, or is that sort of rare?
I don't get so much of that. I've had like, I'll get another one. You get Porzingis pictures, I guess, because he stands out. I mean, my brother-in-law last year sent me a picture of like Porzingis biking.
It
was like when he blew off. It was like the first time he was spotted since
he didn't go to the exit meeting,
A funny story. It was the first time he was spotted since the exit meeting, and my brother-in-law saw him biking, you know, like not a city bike or whatever, on the West Side Highway, and sends me a picture, and I go, can I tweet that? Is that fine? I think they took a picture. He like took a picture with Porzingis. It wasn't like he took like a star, you know, TMZ type picture. They posed for a picture together. And I said, "Can I tweet it?" And I did. And then Berman reached out to me and asked me where the picture could, like, or if I could be put in touch with my, if he could be put in touch with my brother-in-law. So my brother-in-law was very excited to be in the New York Post the next day.
That's fantastic.
That was good.
I want to spend a couple minutes talking about the other big young gun for the Knicks. I don't know if that's the exact right way to phrase that yet again. So not Kristaps, but Frank Ntilikina. Mm-hmm. Before we dive into it, just want to remind our listeners really quickly that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you like what you hear, head on over to iTunes and rate us 5 stars. We would greatly appreciate it. Once again, that's Locked On Knicks. So Frank Ntilikina, I just kind of like to take people's temperature on him. You recently wrote about him and mentioned a couple scouts. I hope that was you. I didn't like mess that up with someone.
Twas me.
Yes, okay. I mean, there have been a couple people writing about him, but I did read a piece of yours. I think it was about a week ago. Mm-hmm. People, you know, have talked about how good he is defensively already, but we know the kind of things that he has to work on offensively, from shooting to tightening up his handle to being more aggressive. I'm kind of curious just like what, if you have an inkling of what he's going to turn out to be. Obviously it's a little bit of reading tea leaves right now, but what do you think about Frank and the job he's doing and like where he can go?
I'm a fan of his. I actually think that, I think when he comes back next year, I think it's going to be a kind of a night and day thing. I kind of expect him after a full off season as an NBA player, after a full year, kind of get an idea, more of a feel and knows what to work on. I like, there's no question the passivity is, and just his lack of aggression on offense is a problem, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there are people who think that in general that's more of a DNA thing, and to him specifically that's a DNA thing. I think that's something you can kind of fit. He's never going to be a dynamic scorer, but I just, mm-hmm. his defense is so good. He has such a good feel for the game, which we don't see as much now. I mean, that was more in the beginning of the year, right? Where you see him kind of drop these pocket passes or on a fast break, kind of a no-look pass, or just he has that innate sense of how to run a team. So his point guard, the way he plays point guard, looks different than the way we kind of are used to from these guys, where now everyone's a dynamic shot creator.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I'm a fan of his, and I mean, and the physical tools. I mean, he's 19, right?
Yeah.
He's like, he's 6'6", he's 6'6", and 200 pounds. And
yeah, that was the crazy thing. He grew an inch.
Yeah, it's like in long ass arms. It's like that's the stuff. Sometimes, you know, it's a cliche. You can't teach height, and I think you can get into trouble with that, like with 7'1" guys. But when the guy's talented and has tools, and that's just another thing that you, it just puts him over guys.
Yeah, I mean, and when you see how good he is defensively, like it's not just being an imposing physical presence, although that's part of it. But like you said, it's like he seems to really read the game very well, and mm-hmm. like that really gives me hope that he can at least become like passable offensively. If he's like understanding the game so well defensively, and that's like very complicated, and he's the youngest player, and you know, in the NBA and all that, like that gives me a lot of hope.
I mean, what the other part I add to that is even like his shot's not broken, so he didn't shoot well. Right. I don't know what the numbers now. I'm gonna see, was he 34% from three or something?
I think
something
he's
like
a
that?
Touch lower, around like 33. He had a couple month stretch where he was like 38%. It was like December, right. January.
So even and his shot, his form's not bad, right? And
yeah, you know, I agree. It looks good to me.
Yeah, and we've had there's all these studies. I think it was Chris Herring who originally did it, right? How guys coming over struggle from Europe struggle that first year at the longer uh-huh. 3-point shot.
Yes.
And he's 19, and you know, college kid gets stronger and all that. Not college kid, excuse me, a teenager.
Yeah.
And you get stronger and all that stuff. I just, to me at the least, like he'll be. You think of 3-and-D guys as wings, not point guards, but at the least he'll be kind of a 3-and-D type of player, which is really, really solid, and I think there's potential for more there. So like, is he ever going to be a perennial all-star? No, but I think he could be a one-time all-star, which to me is really good, you know?
Oh, for sure. And you mentioned something a couple of minutes ago, which I think is actually a really salient point, and this was something that I kind of spent a podcast segment the other day, I wouldn't say bashing, but when Craig Robinson gave his interview about player development, I thought he just used like a more platitudes than he needed to, was more vague than he needed to be, with a lot of like,
I would say that's a fair
right. I mean, you know, he's like, oh, it's top secret, but I can tell you that it's not just dribbling and shooting. It's like, okay, I mean, you can get into a lot more detail than that and still not touch on a lot of stuff that, like, you know, we know like Golden State is using like strobe lights. Like, you can say a little bit more, you know, like with Curry or whatever. But he did mention that he's like, you see more development from our G League team because they have more practice time. There's no practice time, like, during the course of the season. There's no practice time in the NBA during the course of the season, and I think you'll see a lot of development in the summer when they're actually, like, able to work on their game some more. So I do expect him not to take, like, some quantum leap, but to come back, like, I think with, like, you know, significantly improving at least, like, an aspect or two of his game. Like, I think that's a reasonable assumption.
Yep, I would say so. And, you know, kind of just, I mean, listen, bringing Moutier and Burke, I don't think that has not thrilled him. Not that he doesn't like Moutier and Burke, but just he sees himself as a point guard. So
right.
I think that sapped a little bit of his confidence as well and kind of made him, you know,
I mean, that's fair.
More. He's playing, yeah, more looking over his shoulder, and I think that will kind of be worked out over the offseason in terms of, yeah, whether I don't expect him to bring back 3-point guards, and I would expect his role to be kind of more carved out going into next year, and him having an idea. The other thing I would say is I agree the practice part. I would like to see there are certain ways you can maximize your practices more during the season. So like recently, and he wasn't doing this for, you know, he doesn't do this all the time, but recently he started working on kind of those the Euro step type finishes with like assistant coach Dave Bliss, who does a lot of their player development. And you've seen actually he whipped them out a little bit in games. And I think there are time that's something that could be that could have been they could have been using more of throughout the year. As opposed to just starting recently.
Yeah, I think that's fair. He had this one kind of driving lefty layup the other day where I watched it like 10 times because I was like, what did he do to scoot past these guys? And he actually just kind of like jumped from way farther back than I realized. He was like behind the, I forget who the guy was.
Mm-hmm.
But I was like, oh, wow. He's like showing off like a physical attribute. That's the other thing. I think he's a little bit underrated athletically.
Yeah, I mean, because athletically also doesn't have to mean like jumping through the roof, right?
Right.
It could just mean being a little explosive and bigger and stronger than other guys. So if he's being guarded by point guards, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to blow by them. If to him with his size, if a 6'2 guy is guarding him, like, you know, the half an inch of space is equal to what, you know, a 6'1 guy needs in terms of if 6'1 guy got a full inch of space.
Yeah,
if that
totally
makes sense.
No, definitely. So all right, well, that's good to hear. I'm also pretty bullish on Frank, and I also think that I think he's best suited to be a point guard long term, although I wouldn't, especially, I mean, I don't know how much of that for me is like wishful thinking because of the Knicks sort of like with Hardaway, like ideally playing the two. And I'm like, I really want him to be a point guard, but he just seems to have that point guard skill set, the vision He does have good passing touch when he doesn't seem sort of like.
But even now, like, I agree, but like, it almost doesn't matter.
You're right.
Like, everyone needs to be. I mean, you know, in 4 years, let's say, hopefully, you know, if you're a Knicks fan, hopefully the Knicks are competing then, and then you want to really have that kind of ironed out. But until then, you just want guys. It sounds oversimplistic, but like, be able to dribble, pass, and shoot. You just want everybody to be able to do those skills.
No, I know.
Swung around, do that, and like, you get like three or four guys, and you know, we're all going positionless anyway, and you figure out the positions after. And just you want good, smart players. It sounds like so silly, but just it's kind of like going to the draft. But I wouldn't even worry about positions. You just kind of take the best player on the board, good, smart, athletic, young players, and you kind of build around that.
No, I mean, like, cliches are, you know, bad writing, but they're usually cliches for a reason in terms mm-hmm. of like just life experience. And the mm-hmm. older I get, I'm like, you know what? You really do need to take it one day at a time.
That
like,
that's,
or you'll drive yourself nuts. You know, it's like that kind of stuff, which winds up holding up. I want to close out the show by quickly, like I said, I like to take people's temperature on Frank, kind of see what everyone's thinking. Just real quickly, I'm curious if you've developed mm-hmm. any sort of preferences for any of the guys coming out of the draft who figure to be around when the Knicks pick. Is there anyone who you find yourself kind of like, I think that would be the guy if he's around?
Sorry, I'm gonna admit something that I barely watch college basketball.
Yeah, so me neither. I'm like, come on.
So I'm gonna I'll give you two things. One, so I know I kind of do a crash course after the year. I can look up the Draft Express mock draft if you want me to and give you some names.
no, that's quite
which,
all right.
Which I'm pretty sure I want Givony and Draft Express. I want them to pull like a Borat type thing one year prank where like they say somebody, let's say, who's not good and they put them in the top 10 or whatever and they write them up. And because I'm convinced most NBA writers don't actually watch college basketball. I know most don't. And I think they just memorize the Draft Express.
Oh my God. No, it's true.
And just recite them. I feel like, you know, Givony could pull a good prank on somebody. But, you know, and on draft night, just gonna
catch
you guys.
College ball. I'm the same way. Like, I, you know, I start really researching like after the season's over, so I can like, you know, have an informed an opinion if I'm writing or speaking about it. But during the season, it's just like you watch the Knicks play, and as bad as they've been, you know, post KP injury, post actually trying to, you know, win games like very seriously, and they're still so much better than like the best. College team.
Like, I'll say this. I kind of mentioned this before. I wouldn't worry about position. Pretty much the only type of guy I wouldn't take is like, I think Bol Bol, right? It's just a true back to the basket center is the only guy I wouldn't take, really.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about approach, and that's kind of how I feel too. Like, if you think someone's the guy, just take him. He's a point guard. He's a center, a modern center, you know. Like,
yeah, exactly. That's how I would kind of, you know, if it's Colin Sexton from Alabama, people like him, and I wouldn't say, oh, we have Frank. Like, if he's the best player, take him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like really like Sexton yet, but if you think he's like, you know, I mean, this is ridiculous, but you got to kind of use extremes to explain your points. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, like, if you think he's Dwayne Wade or whatever, you don't not draft him because you've got Tim Hardaway. Like,
exactly. You know, so. You deal with that, especially with the Knicks are the position they're in and their team, and they have another long year ahead. And then, like we mentioned before, you know, positions. I mean, do positions really matter anymore? Anyway, yeah. you take the best players. You sort it out after, and if you get good talent, it'll all work itself out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I had a really good time talking to you, Yaron. That's unfortunately all the time we have for today. Is there anything that you would like to plug before we say goodbye?
No, you guys check out my stuff on Bleacher Report and other places occasionally as well. You can follow me on Twitter, and I guess I have a dueling podcast with you that I'm dropped the ball on a little recently, but it's Chris Pod Porzingcast. We're going to put out a new episode soon. Also Knicks, so you can check that out if you're one of these crazy Knicks fans who likes listening to people analyze your not-so-good team.
They'll take it. I think a lot of them wish I would do two a day. I'm like, you know.
Of course.
All right, thanks again.
Thanks, man. Anytime.
That was fun, huh? Had a really good time talking to Yaron. That's it for us today. Hope you guys enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for listening. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. 5 stars only. Don't be a dick about it. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Look at all the great content we got. Subscribe so you don't miss any of it. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks so they don't miss any of it. Follow us on Twitter, Locked On Knicks, or me personally, NBA Injury Report. Be chill to each other and join us tomorrow for another episode. In the meantime, peace!